Case is number 2012-74, Stephenson against the Office of Personnel Management. Mr. McGill.
Good morning, Your Honors. I want to thank you all for allowing me to come before Your Honors. Excuse my obvious nervousness because I'm not really used to arguing in front of a panel of judges. This is a case, Your Honors, that has to do with former federal employees who concurrently were receiving first disability retirement annuity. And I exclude CSRS, and CSRS employees do not have the requirement of filing for Social Security disability concurrently. But that former federal employee who receives both the first disability retirement annuity concurrently with having the requirement to file for Social Security Disability Insurance, therefore then is approved and then receives both during the time period. Then, because of engaging in...
Counsel, to what extent do we owe deference under Chevron in this case?
Deference certainly in terms of interpretation of the statute should be given. But I always tell my kids, you know, that deference should always be given first to truth and then to any precedents in law.
What about under Chevron? What does Chevron say?
As I recall, Your Honor, that it's deference to the interpretation, test or interpretation, so long as there are certain criteria that are met, is my understanding of Chevron.
Does it make a difference that OPM is interpreting a SSA regulation?
I think that they're wrongly interpreting it, Your Honor, and I know that that doesn't go directly to the issue of deference, but one of the things that I wanted to...
Well, just following up on Judge Reyna's question, I think the suggestion is under Chevron you have to give deference to a particular agency, but does that not apply when we're talking about OPM, one agency, interpreting the regulations with regard to another agency, HHS or Social Security within HHS?
Yes, I don't think that it applies to the same extent in weight, Your Honor, especially because if you take a look at how Social Security interprets that statute and how they in fact act, it is in fact contrary to how OPM is taking that interpretation, taking it out of context and then applying it to the offset.
Can I just move, just for my own edification,
okay.
I just want to, these are not more general questions,
sure.
Maybe you're not able to respond and maybe the government can help me out here. I'm just trying to understand the program.
Okay.
You've got FERS, and FERS is generally, if you get a FERS disability payment, it's like, what, 60% generally?
It's 60%
of your
average one high fee the first year, and then it's reduced to 40%, and in that first year, there's 100% offset in Social Security.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Good. You're earning, as I understand it, somewhere in one of these opinions,
yes,
that even if you're on FERS disability getting 60 or then 40%
yes,
offset by Social Security if you're getting Social Security, you can earn up to 80% of your previous income?
That is correct, Your Honor. And that the reason why is because it's a very progressive self-paying system. What FERS and CSRS wanted to do from the very beginning is they wanted to encourage productivity. They didn't want people to simply get disability annuity and then simply sit back and enjoy their disability annuity. What they wanted to do instead was to have a progressive self-paying system. And in that...
So if I retire on first disability and I can go out and earn 80% of the income, so essentially I'm collecting 120 or 140 the first year...
Yes, until age 62, at which point it's recalculated.
It just seems quite unusual.
Unusual, yes, Your Honor, but at the same time, I would argue, Your Honor, that it's a very progressive paradigm in that it's trying to encourage a self-paying system, because then people will go out into the private sector, make additional monies, contribute, pay FICA, pay taxes, and so forth, and pay right back into the system, so that it's not simply a zero-sum balance where you're simply taking without paying back into the system.
Now, let me go back to the, okay, so now back to the system.
Yes.
You said under FERS, it's
yes.
unusual. You have to, in order to qualify for FERS, you have to apply
correct.
For Social Security.
That is correct.
Does Social Security, do you automatically then, because you've qualified for FERS disability, get Social Security
no.
disability?
No, because Social
Security... You have to apply. You have to get it?
No, you do not.
So plenty of people, FERS disability, I apply for FERS disability, I apply for Social Security, I qualify for FERS, but I never qualify.
Most people do never qualify for Social Security, and the reason is because Social Security has a higher standard of disability of quote-unquote total disability.
Okay.
Whereas under FERS and CSRS, the standard is, are you prevented from performing one or more of the essential elements of your particular kind of job? And therefore, it's a recognition that you can't do your particular kind of job. Then if you are awarded the disability retirement under FERS or CSRS, you can go into the private sector and do something else productive, some other vocation that's
okay.
unlike the one that you did.
Okay, now let me move you to this case. Is the nub of your argument that while your client may have been eligible for Social Security, he wasn't getting it, right?
So they there's no actual receipt, correct.
Okay, and this is, are we just talking about this 36-month period?
Yes, yes, we are, Your
Honor. Okay, because
yes.
if at the end of the 36-month period, he's kind of like off the rolls entirely if he's earning income, right, from Social Security.
Correct.
So the government wouldn't be offsetting, and well, I mean, I can ask them, you know, but I'm assuming, do we all agree that the government, we're only talking about offsetting during this period of eligibility?
Well, this period of entitlement, I believe, is what the proper term is. That's correct, that 45-month, we're...
Well, I don't think you want to call it entitlement. Right? I mean, that's...
No, actually, I am not reluctant or reticent to call it a period of entitlement, but I have to explain why.
Well, you better explain, because if both you and the government are calling it entitlement, the case
well,
is over, right?
No, I'm calling it a period of entitlement. And there's a conceptual distinction, and let me just try to explain why. During that 45-month period, there's the initial 9-month period of entitlement where the Social Security Disability Insurance recipient receives both the Social Security whatever payment as well as whatever is received from the substantial gainful activity. That's, I think, as an encouragement to the individual to say, hey, go on and work. You're not losing.
So you're not disputing. There was an offset. When he was getting benefits for those first 9 months, there was the offset for first.
Absolutely.
And
there's
not
no disagreement about that first 9 months.
Okay.
Now we go to the second 36 months. What Social Security is essentially saying is you don't get your Social Security anymore, your disability insurance payment, because you continue to engage in substantial gainful activity. Now, in any month, however, that the person, let's say, loses the job or is on a contract basis, doesn't get enough hours, and falls below that substantial gainful activity, he then, in that month, it's recalculated, essentially, and he gets his Social Security back. So that
you're not disputing that if during that 36-month period one stops working and gets your Social Security check that month, then there would be an offset.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, what I'm arguing, Your Honors, is this. Look at the way that Social Security is acting with respect to entitlement or period of entitlement. They are, in essence, doing what OPM is not doing in that they are offsetting. They are taking what the person is making, receiving, actual receiving, and in essence offsetting what the person should be receiving or could be receiving as entitlement to Social Security. Now, what OPM does is take that out of the context and in a vacuum and says, ah, you're entitled to it, quote-unquote, even though you're not actually receiving it. We're going to offset, even though you're not actually receiving it, because we're going to use the term that Social Security uses of period of entitlement, even though you're not actually receiving it, and we're going to offset that theoretical non-receiving amount and continue it because since they call it entitlement, we're going to continue to call it entitlement, and therefore we're going to offset it. But It's the action, if you think about it, it's the precise action of what Social Security is doing, which OPM is not doing. Social Security is taking the actual receipt from a private sector job and essentially offsetting it and saying, we're not giving you Social Security disability insurance because you're making money. OPM is taking that same argument and saying, well, even though you're not actually receiving it, we're still going to offset it. Interestingly enough, and I know that it's a non-precedential order and so forth, but what Judge Administrative Judge Wagner says in her dissenting opinion in the non-precedential order is essentially what I'm saying now is that in any given month, if you take a look at the first statute, it specifically says, listen, in any given month, when the person isn't getting an offset, then it should be recalculated. If it's not, then it won't be recalculated.
Well, I guess I'm a little troubled by your narrative because what the dissent says is she clearly, as she's understanding this, she's making a distinction, she's drawing a distinction between entitlement and eligibility. You seem here to have conceded that this is an entitlement of some sort, and so I'm not sure. If he is entitled, if you agree that under the Social Security rubric and the words they use, he is during the 36-month period entitled to those benefits every month during that 36 months, then that seems to me to have conceded a lot of your case.
I'm not conceding the concept and the definition of what it means to be entitled. I mean, it's interesting. I always tell my kids, when somebody brings up Merriam-Webster Dictionary, I'm in trouble. On page 12 of Respondent's Brief, they bring up the definition of entitlement. But interestingly, I think that entitlement from my law school day in law of possession and of property, entitlement means that you actually get title to something, that you actually receive something. Otherwise, it's simply a mortgage that's a theoretical a structure. And I'm not conceding the essence of what the term entitlement means. What I'm simply saying is that on its face, Social Security certainly uses the term period of entitlement. But the reason why they use that is because of a very pragmatic reason. Social Security doesn't want the person who is going out and engaging in substantial gainful activity to have to reapply every month that he falls below earning that substantial gainful activity. That would be preposterous. Instead, what they're saying is that during that 36-month period, whatever it is that we're going to call it, we're going to adjust, give you Social Security or not, depending upon what kind of gainful activity you're doing. And it's a very progressive paradigm in doing so. And all I'm saying is that I'm not conceding the essence of the term entitlement, but rather simply conceding that Social Security uses the term period of entitlement, but in a particular narrow context, and that OPM is then taking that out of that narrow context, using the term entitlement in an inappropriate way.
Okay, let's hear from the other side, and you have some rebuttal time left.
Thank you very much, Miguel.
Mr. Scarlato.
Good morning, Your Honor. May I please the Court? Your Honor, this Court should affirm the Board's decision upholding OPM's offset of Mr. Stevenson's FERS annuity for the Social Security disability benefits for which he is entitled. And in all, Your Honor, there are three reasons why this Court should uphold the Board's decision. First, the plain language of the FERS and FS.
So you're saying that he could have obtained those benefits just by asking for them?
That's correct, Your Honor. At issue is this 36-month period, and during that period, Mr. Stevenson appears to have been working. It's not clear in the record, but to Your Honor's question, any month he did not work, I believe it's literally just picking up the phone and calling FSA saying, I didn't work, I couldn't work, pay me.
You're saying he was entitled in the months he did work?
Yes, yes.
But you just said in months he did not work, he could have obtained the benefits. But you also have said that even though he could not receive the benefits, he was entitled to them. I can't put that together.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. let me say it this way first. The plain language of being entitled to something doesn't necessarily mean you have to receive it. You know, maybe a helpful example is, as a federal employee,
how can you be entitled if you can't ask for them?
Well, because it doesn't necessarily mean there's not some sort of condition on it. And here the condition was Mr. Stevenson working or not during that period.
You're saying there's something just unique about this 36 months, that once the 36 months have expired, if he's not getting Social Security, you're not upsetting that. You're saying there's something peculiar about this 36 months, that somehow is an entitlement period, irrespective of whether or not you receive benefits?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that
where are you getting that from?
Well, I'm getting it from several sources, Your Honor. The most important is the plain language of what Congress intended in establishing this 36-month period.
You okay, know, the why don't you show us what provisions you're looking at then?
Sure. This is the Social Security Statute 42 U.S.C. 423. And that's the provision that the first statute simply referenced. He says the offset occurs the extent to which...
Is this in your...
it's the beginning of the brief. Say on page 9. On page 9, we speak about the first statute, and the first statute simply refers to the Social Security statute. So
okay.
On page, starts on page 13. And so that's the statute that creates the meets and bounds of when someone is entitled under to Social Security disability benefits. And subsection A of section 423 first creates a floor. And it creates a floor by putting forth several enumerated categories and says if you meet those categories and apply, then you are, and the statute uses the word, quote, entitled to benefits. Okay, so now we have the floor established. We have to figure out where the ceiling is. And subsection A goes on for quite a bit, but here, as Mr. Stevenson has been discussing, we're talking about the 36-month period. And in that circumstance where there
all right,
is...
Well, I don't understand. Can we just look at the statutory provision you're talking about? Because maybe I'm misreading it, but I'm not seeing it. A says an individual who meets the statutory criteria and applies for disability benefits shall be entitled.
That's correct.
But then A1, as you cite it, seems to say that as to the termination of entitlement. So now we're not talking about entitlement. We're talking about termination of entitlement. It says, or subject to subsection E of this section, concerning an individual who engages substantial gainful employment, the termination must. So is that what we're talking about here? In other words, isn't this statutory provision saying that you're entitled to the benefits except in those months where you're substantially gainfully employed?
No, Your Honor. If you look at subsection E, it doesn't say you lose your entitlement. It says the benefit shall not be payable in that month. And that's the critical distinction here.
Well, I'm looking at your citation, and it says, as to the termination of that entitlement. Those are your words. So that doesn't say... As to that entitlement, it says, as you're describing it as terminating the entitlement when he's substantially gainfully employed.
Well, I believe that overreads the first portion of that. The statute is a little confusing because there's many words involved. But the end of it is...
Where's the end? The end of it, okay.
Well, it's the end of it for purposes of this section. If you're looking at the brief, it's the highlighted part where it says, in no event... In no event can the termination month be before 36 months following the end of the 36-month period. And that's the critical language where Congress is telling the court and the world that in no event an individual such as Mr. Stevenson lose their entitlement during this period.
What about the statutory provision cited at page 10 of your brief? This is 8452. So forth.
Well, this would be the first statute, which is really what this court is ultimately interpreting as
right.
Lighten, but
well,
that,
it says the amount of disability insurance benefit to which annuitant is entitled to under SSA, and then it says for a month in which the annuity commences or is restored, or if no entitlement to such disability insurance benefit exists for such month, the first month after which. I mean, doesn't it refer to the lack of entitlement, or is that talking about something else?
No, that's speaking about something else. That's talking about the amount of the first annuity, Your Honor. What the key language in the first statute is really simply the offset provision, which is a different section, 8452A1A, which states for any month in which an annuitant is entitled to both essentially an annuity under the FERS, and to a disability insurance benefit under Section 223 of the Social Security Act. So again, the court is using the word, that Congress is using the word entitled. Now, the legislative history on the first statute isn't very clear in this area, and we cite the Johnston MSPB case where the board reviewed some of that. But what you do see is that there were some versions of the bill, the FERS Act, where Congress did use the word payable. So again, we have this, what is payable versus what is entitled. Ultimately, Congress used the word entitled in its internal wisdom. So in using that word and simply referring to the Social Security Act, it requires this court to go to the Social Security Act and understand what Congress's intent as to when a person is entitled. And again, that's answered by subsection A of the Social Security Act. We just went through that. It establishes a floor. It establishes a ceiling. And as under the Chevron test, Your Honor, that really satisfies the first prong. The Congress intent is clear that the plain language gives you the answer you need. But there's a second layer to this, Your Honor, and that is SSA's regulations. To the extent this court might find some ambiguity in the Social Security disability statute, SSA made clear that this is exactly how it intended the act to be interpreted. And that's found in several places. The first is where SSA defines the word entitled. That is 20 CFR 404.303.
Can I interrupt you before you ask?
Of course.
What possible policy consideration could drive the distinction made? You're eligible, but whether we say you're entitled or not, he's not receiving the Social Security benefits for certain months. How can there be an offset of the Social Security benefit that he's received when he hasn't received it?
Because he's working. And that's, Your Honor has to think about why one would receive disability benefits, and that's because you can't work. So Congress has created this 36-month period where essentially an individual can test his ability to work.
Well, he's receiving, he can work up to 80% and still get his first disability. We can't assume that the policy is if you're available to work, you can't get first disability.
Right, and Your Honor, I would say you can't assume the opposite either. And if Your Honor looks at the language of the statute and SSA regulations, SSA and the statute both go the other way. And they say that entitlement continues, because again, entitlement does not have to mean you receive that benefit.
But what's the distinction then when the 36 months expire and he's still working, you're saying, and he's not getting Social Security, there's no offset. Nobody's disputing that, right? The government isn't going after him once 36 months expire.
That's correct.
So what's the distinction?
Well, at that point, SSA determines that your disability is over and you lose your entitlement under the statute and under the regulation. So that the situation changes. Now, I understand there's sort of this odd bubble period that occurs, but under the statute, under SSA regulations, that period exists. And this court must follow Congress's interpretation along with SSA's interpretation of that period. Now, I would also note, Your Honor, that the offset is not a one-to-one dollar-for-dollar offset, right? Under the statute, there's an offset of 100% of the SSA disability benefits the first year. After that first year, it's only 60%. And the same question, Your Honor, could ask is, well, why would Congress not want a one-for-one dollar-for-dollar offset? The legislative history isn't clear on that point either, but the statute's clear, and here the regulations are clear on this particular point.
What's the cap on SSA in terms of what disqualified him on any particular month for getting the SSA benefits in terms of how much he was working or how much he was earning?
In contrast to FERS, it's a specific dollar amount, and I believe it's somewhere in the range of about $1,000 a month. So Congress has created, and there's no dispute that this is a valid regime, where you have Social Security benefits that extend to one level, and then FERS, which goes up to a much higher level, 80% is a pretty significant peak. And so the question is, what happens in between? And here we have this regime created where SSA has created a 36-month entitlement, I'll call bubble period, where one can receive benefits simply by picking up the phone and receiving those benefits.
Now, the majority here in the board characterized in a footnote is this as an opposite result leading to some sort of a windfall for him. And I don't really understand the windfall given the way the whole system works. I mean, if he's gainfully employed, he can get FERS if he's gainfully employed. So he's not getting a Social Security benefit, but he's not getting an offset from the Social Security benefit. So I don't understand where the windfall applies if we disagree with you.
Right. Your Honor, the extent of the windfall would be the extent of the work for profit, the income that the individual is making, in lieu of...
He's not getting Social Security benefits during that period. So where's the windfall? I mean, you're offsetting benefits which he's not receiving. I don't understand how not allowing that to happen gives him a windfall.
What I believe the board was referring to is if the board were to hold otherwise and say you can work during this 36-month period and then you'll get your full FERS, that they would essentially consider that double recovery, where now you're getting full FERS plus the income from your work, your profit.
Right.
And so that's your...
Well, that's what you're entitled to for everything outside of the 36 months. If you never qualify for Social Security, you're entitled to that as well.
Well, Your Honor, I think then you're falling into Mr. Stevenson's trap, which is that entitlement has to mean receipt, right? But that's not how entitlement has...
The work that he was doing for Social Security when he wasn't receiving the benefits during this 36-month period, was that also counted against the caps on FERS in terms of outside income?
Yes, it would have been. So if it was substantial enough to make
right.
the 80%...
Which also argues against why it would be a windfall, in my view. But the other argument that the board used was that it was somehow an administrative nightmare, right, to do otherwise. The government's not pressing that view here, is it? I mean, the whole system, we can all probably agree, is an administrative nightmare of sorts, but... This is the, you know, Social Security is able to calculate on a month-to-month basis during this 36-month period. Why should it be any different for OPM?
Right. Your Honor, there would be some administrative difficulties, but as Congress says you have to do it, you know, we're not disputing that we have to do it.
Right. That's not a rationale for not doing it because it presents some other administrative requirements.
Right. But the point here is that Congress isn't requiring OPM to do that. All they're requiring to do is determine whether an individual is entitled under the SSA statute 223. And that's where this court's likely.
Their main argument is this is a period of eligibility. So he is eligible every month out of this 30-month period, and that's sufficient.
No, Your Honor, our argument would be that this period is a period of entitlement.
I'm sorry, entitlement.
Yes, I'm sorry. Entitlement.
I meant to say entitlement.
Right, and the point is that the plain language of the statute says in no event would Mr. Stevenson not be entitled. So that's one. The second layer to this, even if this court disagrees on that point, is SSA regulations define entitled as having applied and proven your right. And that's it. And Mr. Stevenson relies on that definition, but nowhere do you see a mention of receipt. And that's where this court's Leighton decision is.
Because he can't apply if his income is too high. So that's really where I'm having trouble. Say he's entitled to receive it, but we're not going to give it to you because you can't apply?
Because you can choose whether or not to work, and if you don't work, if you do work, then yes, you won't receive it.
You won't receive it?
For that month.
But you're still entitled to it, so you can be entitled to something that we're not going to allow you to receive?
Because you chose to work, right. For example, Your Honor, as a federal employee, I'm entitled to a certain number of vacation days, right?
Right.
And today I am entitled to a vacation day. However, I had a pretty important appointment, so I couldn't take it. But if Your Honor asked me, I would say, yes, I am entitled to the day. Just today is not a day that I can take it. Similarly, Mr. Stevenson was entitled throughout the 36-month period, and it just depended on whether he worked or not. So that entitlement was contingent on something that he could or could not do, but ultimately the entitlement remained.
Is there a requirement under Social Security that you, if you're able to do it, then you go out and work? I mean, you're right, he's entitled and he made a decision to go out and work. Could he have, if he had a job offer to do X, Y, and Z, and he said, well, no, I'd rather just get my Social Security benefits. Is that allowed? Is there just some monitoring of that?
During the 36-month period, Your Honor, it's essentially the honor system. Right? Yes, he could make a phone call and say, I didn't work, and maybe there's some checking, but generally, at least the benefits would be payable. Maybe they would audit that down the road.
How do you respond to your opponent's statement that your interpretation creates a disincentive for people to go to get off of disability and go out to work and thereby help augment the economy of the United States?
Well, a couple points, Your Honor. First is that the FERS system requires an individual to apply for Social Security. There's a regulation, not cited in the briefs, where OPM requires an individual to apply for Social Security in order to receive FERS. So you have to do one in order to get the other. So essentially that scenario could not exist.
So you think that demonstrates that there is, everybody thought about this disincentive, but they made the decision that they ought to do that, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And yes. And
is that because they were trying to save some money for under the FERS disability system?
No, Your Honor, I believe it's because Social Security has tried to create this system where we try to get folks back to work, and therefore that 36-month period exists, where your entitlement remains based on a very easy circumstance that's whether you can work or not. And that can fluctuate from month to month during that period.
Okay, I think we have the position.
Thank you,
Mr. Carlotta. Mr. McGill?
Thank you very much, Your Honor. In practical terms, I would like Your Honors to understand that it really would rarely be a waving sort of a graph where a person 1 month falls under and then goes over, so that in pragmatic matters, I don't think it would be an administrative nightmare. In that, for most people who are going to work, they're going to maintain their substantial gainful activity for months on end. And so that it's very rare unless it's some sort of a...
Yeah, but that's the whole SSA system. I mean, everything's an administrative nightmare, but they've accepted it. And SSA, for his Social Security benefits, it's on a month-to-month.
Sure, it is.
That's right. The system they've created. So it could be a nightmare because every month they might have to... He may go off and on and off and on, but that's the system, right?
Yes, I would agree. But I'm just saying in pragmatic, real terms, I'm not sure whether or not what percentage of the population would actually... undergo that sort of a graph where it becomes...
Well, and did your client for that... So did he generally, for that whole 36-month period, was he gainfully employed?
No, he actually lost his job, I believe... I don't want to be quoted on this, but I think after about a year and a half, he lost his job. There simply wasn't enough work for him, and so he lost his job. And so then I believe that he was allowed for Social Security for a couple of months, and then he went out, again, became gainfully employed.
And then the 36 months, I assume, have expired now.
I believe so.
And so is he now on Social Security benefits because he's not gainfully employed, or is he off?
Yes, I'm not sure, Your Honor.
Okay. What he's seeking then is the period, that offset for the period of the 36 months in which he was gainfully, was not receiving his Social Security benefits. In other words, he was gainfully employed.
Correct, yes. And of course, as far as the issue concerning the disincentive, while it is true that all FERS applicants and annuitants have to file for Social Security, it all depends upon how much effort you're going to put into it. So that if you apply for Social Security, you can put minimal effort in, because all that is required under the FERS statute is a receipt showing that you filed. You don't have to put much effort into it. When Social Security asks for further information, for instance, you don't have to supply it. They'll then deny it. You'll get a denial letter, and you can then submit that denial letter to OPM, and OPM will say, you've satisfied the criteria under the FERS statute.
As you mentioned, I mean, it's more stringent to get on, the requirements more stringent for Social Security disability typically than under the...
Yes, program. That's correct. And so that the disincentive, of course, is that at the time of a filing, a federal employee is going to say to himself, well, I can't do my particular federal job. Can I do something else? If I can do something else, then in all likelihood, I really don't want to get Social Security and get approved for Social Security. One final point, Your Honors, and that is that when we're talking about the common usage of a term or what a term means, such as entitlement, I want to reiterate, Your Honor, because I am not conceding the term entitlement, but there is a period of entitlement. But it is interesting, for instance, in the appendix SA3, that Social Security itself, Carolyn Simmons, Associate Commissioner for Central Operations, uses that same term in what you and I and everybody would use in its common parlance, and that is in the letter to Mr. Stevenson, she says your payments continue during blah, 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 and she says you are not entitled to payments beginning September 2009 because you were doing substantial work. So Social Security itself uses that term entitlement in the way that everybody else understands it, and that is, in order to be entitled, you're receiving something. If you're not receiving something, then you're not really entitled to it. You might be in a period of entitlement or whatever else, but you're not receiving it, and so you're not entitled to it. Then, of course, the issue then turns to what it means to offset. And I think that just as importantly as the term entitlement is the term offset. How can you possibly offset a theoretical construct as opposed to an actual receipt of something? And that's what OPM is doing, is saying, you're getting a theoretical construct of an entitlement, we're going to continue to offset it. And Mr. Stevenson's argument is, you can't offset something you're not receiving. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McGill and Mr. Scarlato. The case is taken under submission.
Thank you very much.